Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Aria 6 of A Storm of Swords, and it is a doozy. It is thrilling. It is compelling. It's actually sad at some points as well. And it kind of has everything that I love about George R. R. Martin's writing. So I'm very excited to get into it. But before we get into all that, I got to ask you, Matt, a very important question. How are you?
Hey, man, you know, another day. Whew. Let me tell you, this whole being a dad business. Some days
you're not like, easy, huh?
Oof, man, this whole baby, having a baby business. Some days you're like, man, things are great. Next day you're like, wow, I'm not doing this again. snip, snap. Everything's pretty good. Jimmy and I are recording. We're recording late. This is like Bend the Knee after hours, right?
Yeah, a little bit of a after dark episode here. It's going on 10 o'clock my time. Usually I'm in bed at 10:30. So I'm stretching it, but I gotta be here, Matt, because I'm going out of town this week, and I wanted to make sure that we got an episode in before I dipped out.
Absolutely. A little Viva Las Vegas action for Jimmy over there. I wish I was going too.
I know. I was kind of hoping maybe it'd be that random occurrence, you know, where
this actually could be a week that we could go. We got some stuff going on down there in Vegas with my wife's family, because her brother lives down there, and her mom's heading down there actually this weekend. So it's like,
why don't you just hop on a flight, man?
I know. It's only 2 hours.
I got Penn and Teller tickets. I'll take you.
Man, what was that? Where was that steakhouse we ate at? That was pretty good.
We ate at we ate at Carmine's, right? Way to Carmine's, a little Italian joint in the Caesar's Palace shop. So me and Matt actually first met some people probably know this story, but we have a lot of new listeners since House of Dragons season 2. Me and Matt actually met, and I was still just a listener of the show at the time before I had came on and started working with the boys. And we ended up meeting at the beer garden above Paris Hotel upside of Hex. And we were in February, and it was like a week before COVID hit. So that was like the last thing I did for like a year and a half. And we had a great talk. I think we talked for like 4 or 5 hours. And
it was awesome.
Yeah, it was a great time. And then I think after the whole COVID deal, you and I met up. And
well, we were going to go to the Game of Thrones convention in Vegas.
And it got canceled.
And actually, there's a little bit of news from George today that kind of ties into that. But we'll talk about it. Yeah, because they were going to have a convention in Hodor. Was going to DJ.
He was going to have a Hodor rave at the end, because apparently the guy who played Hodor is a DJ. And me and Matt had tickets. We were going to go. We were going to get freaky. It was going to be fun. But unfortunately, it got canceled, so I wasn't able to write the trip off on my taxes, which sucked. But we still made the best of it.
Oh, that's a good thing to remember.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why I went, and it didn't happen, so I couldn't write it off anymore.
Like, oh, that's a good thing to remember. Yeah.
But we had a great time. We ended up, we tried to go to one restaurant, and we realized that we booked the wrong day. So then we ended up having a rush and I think it was a Saturday night in Vegas. So getting a dinner reservation at Saturday night in Vegas is.
Yeah, my wife had accidentally scheduled dinner reservations for the wrong day. So we get there, they're like, yeah, you're not on the books. We're like, uh-oh.
We're like, oh, could you make it work? And they're like, absolutely not. We were like, okay, well, we'll find somewhere else.
We'll find someplace.
And we did. We had a great time. We had, Carmine's. It's a solid Italian place in the Caesar shops that we again, spent about 4 or 5 hours. I think we shut it down that night. But it's always fun. So me and Matt, two of the three times that we've gotten together actually have been in Vegas. The other time, of course, was Matt's wedding.
Yes.
Which was an absolute pleasure. But we got to get back together just soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we just got to schedule. Vegas is easy because you go there a lot, and it's like 2 hours for
us. I'll tell you where I will be next year. And I think you might need to make an appearance. And if not, I'll drive down and see you. WorldCon. So WorldCon is the biggest science fiction fantasy festival. It's really a lot of people just mention the science fiction portion, but it is fantasy, kind of speculative fiction. And that's where they hand out the Hugo Award, which is like the biggest award you can get in the genre. Mm-hmm. And George R. R. Martin goes almost every single year, and he just walks around the floor.
And next year is in Seattle, I'm guessing.
Next year is in Seattle, my friend. Okay. So right. I think you should go, and we should, you know, wrestle George and lock him in a room until he finishes the book. But regardless, that'd be a great time for us to get together, or I can drive down to you from there. We'll make
I know. George and I might be related. I need to ask. That's what I really want to ask about. His mother's last name. I remember watching this like thing about it. His mother's last name is Brady, which is my last name.
So you, Tom, and George.
So we might. I've got to get on 23andMe, Ancestry, you know, whatever. We might be distant cousins.
There's a amazing Appalachia joke somewhere in here that I could make, but I just won't. I just won't make it on the podcast. You know what, though? You could be. And if so, maybe you will be the one to inherit the throne of George, possibly. Wouldn't that be great?
I'd be down. Okay, though, Jimmy, let's go ahead and dive into today's chapter. This is Arya. What do we have? Arya 6 of A Storm of Swords. Arya and Gendry are blindfolded until they reach the Hollow Hill, the secret base of the Forgotten Fellowship. Sandor Clegane is brought bound before Thoros of Myr, and Arya cannot believe how different the Red Priest looks. The Hound is to be judged by Beric Dondarrion and hanged if found guilty. Thoros is a changed man, no longer a fat priest with a fake flaming sword saying, "I am not the false priest you knew. The Lord of Light has woken in my soul. Many powers long asleep are waking, and there are forces moving in the land." When Dondarrion appears, Arya is appalled by his appearance. Once handsome, the man is now stick thin, missing an eye with part of his skull crushed in, a noose scar around his neck, and a terrible wound through his chest. Dondarrion asks for charges to be made against Sandor, but the Hound spits at the accusations, laying them at the feet of his brother and others. Arya accuses him of killing Micah, and the Hound does not refute that. The Lightning Lord sentences him to trial by battle, and it'll be Dondarrion he faces. Before the fight, Thoros says a prayer to R'hllor, and then Dondarrion cuts open his palm with a sword, causing the blade to take fire. The fight ends with Clegane's shield destroyed and his left arm in flames, but the Hound cuts Dondarrion from shoulder to breastbone. Sandor is screaming in pain and fear from the hideous burn to his arm. When Arya confronts him about Micah, Clegane admits killing the boy, and suddenly Dondarrion appears alive and leaning against Thoros to tell Sandor he has gone to hell. Now, this is, again, hey, we have some action going on here in the chapter for those of people who really want action. This is also a chapter that you can actually really just go watch the scene in the show. And the scene in the show is actually, because I rewatched it today, man, that is an underrated fight.
Oh, it's incredible. Honestly,
it's one of the most, I mean, even in the books, but especially in the show, I will say, because, you know, this is one of those things where I know some people were like, I don't want to hear about the show, but like, it's a fight scene, you know. I mean, like, fight scenes are almost always better in live action than in books. There are some differences, and we'll talk about those as well. And some book theories we'll get to, stuff that it ties into. But even in the show, that's a really underrated fight. Because when you go and you search like top 10 Game of Thrones fights, it's always like, all right, the Hound and or the Viper in the Mountain, you know, like stuff like that. But man, this fight's awesome.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. You know, we're 300 roughly in a trade. We're like 380 pages in. I would say, well, we're about a third through. You know, we're not quite halfway. We're almost there. This is a really epic battle to have about a third of the way through the book. And yes, it's not like spanning multiple pages like Blackwater, but it's of a lot of consequence, and it's going to set our characters out on different journeys. But I think the action in this scene is super gripping. Like, George writes really good battle scenes, and I know that he's actually been inspired a lot by Bernard Cornwell, who's a famous historical fiction writer, bestseller. I mean, one of the biggest of all time. And he has a wonderful Arthurian trilogy called The Warlord Chronicles that I highly recommend to people who are listening, especially if you like the audiobooks. Jonathan Keeble does. I mean, he's amazing. But as I was reading this chapter today, a lot of it felt like very Bernard Cornwell-esque, which is a good thing because I think he does action extraordinarily well. But man, George is just so good at the moment-to-moment stuff in the scene. Like, he writes it so fluently where you can actually kind of start to picture some of these things. And I'm not a very visual reader. I don't imagine a lot when I read. But with this, if I try really hard, I can actually kind of see it playing out, which is funny because I'll be honest, I remember really liking the scene in the show, but I couldn't tell you the differences between, like, I don't remember it that well from the show. I just remember thinking it was pretty awesome when it happened.
Yeah, Yeah, it's just it's like because I rewatched it today. I don't know how long is it. Have you watched that fight recently, or just last time you watched it was when you watched it on TV?
Last time I rewatched the show.
I rewatched the fight today, and I mean, yeah, it's just so cool because obviously Beric has a flaming sword, and the Hound is, you know, they just do like they're like cutting into barrels, and there's more fire. It's just a really really cool scene, and then all of the facial expressions on the Hound where you can see like him being scared of the fire. It's just a very very cool scene. It's about 3 minutes. You can find it on YouTube if you just want to watch the fight that goes along, obviously, with this. And this is one of those things where, you know, most fights you can watch because they're pretty similar. So really really cool fight. But I mean, here we go, Jimmy. The opening line is just insane because
I put wow on my notes.
George being George, as we you know, basically as we like to say here, her eyes had grown accustomed to blackness, which of course ties in not just to this, but the fact that Arya is going to be blind at some point in the future. You know, as we get to the Dance of Dragons, and I mean, she goes over there and is training with the Faceless Men. So when Harwin pulled the hood off her head, the ruddy glare inside the Hollow Hill made Arya blink like some stupid owl. Kind of like that, too. It's just like pulling the hood off of her head. You know, is that kind of like pulling a face off of you as well?
Yeah, a little bit, right? And I also think that it's interesting because, you know, this is Arya's POV, and some stupid owl is 100% something Arya would say. Mm-hmm. So it's like a really good way of describing the scene.
Yeah. And then we do dive down just a little bit too, like neither wolves or lions when they're talking about like why they chose this place. And Arya's skin prickled. She remembered the dream she'd had, the taste of blood when she tore the man's arm from his shoulder. So there's also the tie to Warging and the wolves.
And where are we, Matt? Where are we right here? We're at the roots of a werewood.
Yep.
Humongous.
There's a lot going on. It's insane. But yeah, I mean, he sets the scene, like even in setting the scene, he's obviously thinking about like where this character is going to be going. And that's something I don't think you and I really talk about a lot is we talk, you know, obviously is like, if you're listening to the podcast, it's you're here for like the deep, crazy theories. And that's what we look at. But sometimes it is just scene setting. And also you can tell he's thinking about where this character is going to be going. And that's kind of the direction he's here. I mean, you've got her eyes are going to be black. You've got like the hood coming off the head. You've got like you said, Arya blinking like some stupid owl, which is just also a sense of who Arya is. Then you've also got like neither wolves nor lions, which kind of ties in a little bit of like not having an identity. If you want to look at that. And then she'd remember the dream she had of the warg. So it's like all of these things right here in this one little,
And also painting an idea that there are multiple gods, because we're talking about werewoods, which belong to the old gods. And then this chapter is full of R'hllor. Mm-hmm. Right. And then Arya is going to go off to the House of Black and White.
Mm hmm. And she's going to go in her own direction too.
Crazy.
Yeah. So yeah, this is a really cool chapter. And we'll just kind of keep going here. You know, but big as the fire was, the cave was bigger. It was hard to tell where it began and where it ended. The tunnel mouths might have been 2 feet deep or gone on 2 miles. Arya saw men and women and little children, all of them watching her warily. So, hey, who else is going to be in a cave that's really, really big? And he doesn't know how big it is, and there's children there as well. Bran. Right?
Yeah, different type of children, but certainly the same title.
And then you've got Greenbeard, you know, just that connection there with Green. George does that. Here's the wizard, Skinny Squirrel. You'll get your answers now. He pointed towards the fire where Tom Sevenstring stood, talking to the tall, thin man with oddments of old armor buckled over his ratty pink robes. That can't be Thoros of Myr. Arya, remember the red pieces. Priest is fat with a smooth face and a shiny bald head, and you know, now he's much skinnier. And I think in the show he has a line where he's talking about like, well, I've had to live off the land for a little bit, you know, and like that's it's just something like that he throws off. So yeah, just kind of setting the stage here. And then and then they bring in the Hound, and this is where a lot of things change for Arya.
There's one thing before that's very very important that plays a through line through this whole book. And I mentioned it last episode as a direct piece of evidence that someone is actually something, possibly. And that thing is tansy. And Huster Tully is going to be talking about tansy.
Oh, yes.
And we talked about how Catelyn thinks that he cheated, but in reality, it's probably the fact that Lysa had to take Tansy to abort the child that she was probably going to have with Peter at one point. But last chapter, we hear about tansy as a herb in Sam's pouch. I believe it was Sam's pouch, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oop, there's your hint that tansy could be something. But in this chapter, we see a girl named Tansy with a capital T. So George is messing with us, giving us in no Catelyn chapter at all, where any of this stuff is with the Tully.
And
the
Catelyn chapter is next.
Oh, I'm sure it is, George. Right. I'm sure it is.
Two, Tansy, which also is because we're Catelyn. You're seeing resurrection here by the Brotherhood Without Banners. And
who
then
will we then give their breath to Catelyn at the end of this book to raise Lady Stone. I mean, dude, right. It's so good, the fact that he does these things. And the Tansy mystery goes throughout the whole novel. And he just drops this in plain as day. You know, mm-hmm. I love that. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. So, okay. So they capture him. And this is interesting, too. It's like, how did you take him? The dogs caught the scent. He was sleeping off mm-hmm. a drunk under a willow tree, if you believe it. So, like, even that. The hound is captured by dogs, by like a group of dogs is ultimately mm-hmm. who finds him, which is, of course, you know, certainly kind of interesting.
Kind of gives a tip to who it's going to be, right?
Yeah. The shifting flames painted Sandor Clegane's burned face with orange shadows, so he looked even more terrible than he did in the daylight. When he pulled at the rope that bound his wrist, flakes of dry blood fell off. The hound's mouth twitched. "I know you," he said to Thoros. You know, and you did in melees, you'd curse my flaming swords, right? Even though I overthrew you with it thrice. So I will say here, this is also a chapter where, and we'll be getting to the fight here in a minute. This is one of these chapters where I begin to believe the idea, and I still like the idea in the books, that Azor Ahai could just be like some rando person. That, I mean, yes, I know we all want it to be Jon Snow or Dany or whoever, but I've, you know, the idea of being born amidst salt and smoke, like this is a turning point for the Hound where he essentially gets a new life, right?
He gets a new life later too.
He does too. Exactly. So, and you know, there's obviously smoke, there's salt, you know, there's all of these things. I've always liked the idea that the Hound could end up being Azor Ahai simply just because he is scared of fire, and for him to just be the hero. Like you could still have the prince or princess who's promised to be two different people. I mean, in the show, they kind of actually did that, where Jon is essentially the prince who was promised, and he just brings everyone together to defeat the Night King.
Yeah.
He's not actually the one who did it, which for better or for worse, right?
He goes on a hike after. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. I mean, whether or not that was a good idea or not, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you could still go that route in the books where it's like he is the person who brings everyone together, the shield that guards the realm of man. You know, you're bringing everyone together. He's not going to be the one who actually strikes it down. So that's why I've always thought it could be cool if Azor Ahai isn't John.
Yeah.
And it is somebody even like a blanking on his name. No, I'm blanking on his name because we were talking about his dad, Jorah Mormont. Last week we were talking about Jorah Mormont. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, something like that I think could be cool.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, also, let's just say it is going to be, you know, who we think it would be. There's still going to be red herrings and little tidbits for him. I mean, this is what George does. He sends us all over the place looking, scouring chapters. I mean, the Tansy thing's a good example, but also this is a great example of him using descriptions to their maximum potential, not just to give us a sense of what's going on in the scene or what we're seeing or what we're smelling, but also, you know, kind of tickling our brains to get us thinking like, oh, wait, what was that prophecy about? What was that all about? And then, you know, matching it up. So all this is intentional for sure.
Yeah. Okay. We continue on a little bit here too. And they talk about, hey, Ned Stark sent us out, but he was sitting there on the Iron Throne when he gave us his command. So we were never truly his men, but Robert's. These people are still operating saying, hey, we are Robert's men.
Hey, me too, bud. Me too.
Yeah. Same. The king is dead. But we are still the King's men, though the royal banner we bore was lost at the Mummer's Ford when your brother's butchers fell upon us. He touched his breast with a fist. Robert is slain, but his realm remains, and we defend her. Her, the hound snorted, is she your mother, Dondarrion, or your whore? Dondarrion, Beric Dondarrion, had been handsome. Sansa's friend Jane had fallen in love with him. Even Jane Poole was not so blind as to think this man was fair. Yet when Arya looked at him again, she saw it. The remains of a forked purple lightning bolt on his cracked enamel of his breastplate.
Yeah, so this does a couple things, right? It reminds us about Jane Poole. Reminds us that she was close to Sansa. Arya knew her. Obviously, Jane and Arya are going to be switched at some point. But also, it kind of gives us a reason to believe that Dondarrion has went through a very drastic transformation from somewhere where like a younger girl is in love with him, thinking he's like Prince Charming, to the grotesque display of almost zombification that we see of him in this chapter. So it kind of serves two purposes here, signposting Jane Poole, but also to show Beric Dondarrion's transformation and just how much he's been through.
Yeah, I also like this, too. Even Jane Poole was not so blind as to think this man was fair. Right. So here you have Jane Poole thinking like about something to think. Like she's looking at one thing and kind of thinking another, because that's ultimately the route she goes in. Right.
Yeah.
Where, definitely. Oh, clearly you're going to be looking at Jane Poole thinking it's Arya Stark, but it's not. It's actually Jane Poole.
Makes you wonder if Beric Dondarrion and Jane Poole will ever be in the same scene again. Like maybe, when we get back Winterfell, maybe the Brotherhood Without Banners. That I don't know. I'm not sure, but it could happen.
Yeah. Beric might be dead.
Yeah.
In the books.
Yeah.
We don't really know. We don't really know. I mean, it's one of those things where
I love Beric Dondarrion.
Like we kind of think he is because he supposedly gave his last, kiss or whatever to Lady Stoneheart, but we don't know. I mean, I would say the possibility certainly exists that he could show back up. Obviously, in the show, he plays a much bigger role, and he continues. And does he die? Does he die?
Well,
in the Battle of Winterfell, it's been too long since I've seen that episode.
I don't remember.
We certainly don't see him afterwards, so I don't really know. He's there with Arya when they're in the room, and then Melisandre's there and says, "You're the one who's going to go kill the Night King." But I don't know if I think he does. I think he goes out like a boss.
It's been so long, I can't remember. I do know in the books that most people believe that he's dead in the books.
I think he could come back. I wouldn't write him off completely.
But George, I've also seen some people say that he's actually out there looking for Hallen Reed and Lyanna and all this crazy stuff. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's so many crazy things, right? The big thing is that Beric does not die on page. So everyone's like, if he didn't die on page, it means he's alive. But I do think sometimes people just die off page in A Song of Ice and Fire. Like
that was a big reason as I didn't think Stannis was dead in the show for a long time.
Oh, really?
I was like, this is Game of Thrones. We literally see everyone die, and they kill Stannis off screen.
Yeah.
For a long time, I was like, I don't know if Stannis is dead.
He did.
Yeah, he's dead.
He big dead.
but I mean, they never show it. So I was like, for a long time, I was like, I'm still not trusting it just yet. Okay, so they talk about being brothers. They talk about being knights, and Darian's a knight, but the rest of you are the sorriest lot of outlaws a broken man ever seen. I shit better men than you. Any knight can make a knight. All right. Well, there you go. The hedge knight, ties in and all that.
That's stuff. A beautiful thing here.
It is. And the scarecrow, that was Beric Dondarrion. And every man you see before you has felt a sword upon his shoulder. Well, Dondarrion's about to feel a sword on his shoulder. So, you can keep going on. You will die soon enough, dog, promised Thoros, but it shan't be murder, only justice. A kinder fate than you deserve for all you have done. Lions, you call yourselves. As Shear and the Mummer's Ford, girl of 6 and 7 years were raped, and babies still on the breast were cut in two while their mothers watched. No lion ever killed so cruel. I was not at Shear, nor the Mummer's Ford, the hound told him. Lay your dead children at some other door. Thoros answered him, do you deny that House Clegane was built upon dead children? I saw them lay Prince Aegon and Prince Rhaenys before the Iron Throne. By rights, your arms should bear the two bloody infants in place of those ugly dogs. The hound's mouth twitched. Do you take me for my brother? Is being born Clegane a crime? He says, murder is crime. He says, who did I murder? Lord Lothar Mallory and Sir Glad and Wild. My brothers, Lister and Lennox, declared Jack B. Lucky. Beck and Mudge, the Miller son from Donalwood. You know, they kind of continue on here, listing a lot of different people that he would have killed. And he says, enough. You're making noise. These names mean nothing. Who were they? People, said Lord Beric. People, great and small, young and old, good and bad people who died on the points of Lannister spears or saw their bellies opened by Lannister swords. It wasn't my sword in their bellies. Any man who says it is a bloody liar.
Man, I actually think that this is one of the moments where we're supposed to really feel like the Hound is making his case to be likable to us in some ways, because clearly he's faulted like most characters in the series. But with seeing Beric Dondarrion and the Brother Without Banners like not take up for Ned Stark as the reader, who generally we do like the Starks, kind of makes you like, well, come on, just put him with the Starks. Like, why do you got to be in this middle, man? You know, very gray area, you could say. Mm-hmm. And then you have the Hound giving them a big dose of truth. Like, you vigilantes think that you're above me. You're murderers, too. He's spitting straight facts here. And I love it. I love the Hound.
The Hound is in my top three favorite characters.
And hey, this is why this is the GOAT, bro. Because all these lines that people quote and make compilations of in the show, a lot of them are from this book. A lot of them are from the words that George wrote. He wrote this character so well.
Oh, the Hound is easily one of the best written characters.
Yeah.
The Hound might actually be the best. I mean, along with Tyrion, the Hound might be the best written character.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of like disdain that he has for like titles and kind of like properness that's all BS. And I think we all feel that too in our job sometimes. Like, these people who are our bosses are supposed to be so smart and noble and have control, and they constantly don't, or they lie. And Hound is just sitting here calling it straight. He's saying what's on his mind. And I don't know. I kind of love it. He has also one of the most badass lines ever in any book I've ever read in this chapter.
Yeah. And hey, we have another big thing to take mention here. Real quick, do you want to mention that line?
Go ahead. I'll mention line once we get there.
Okay. Okay. So a couple things happen a little bit here. Your swords you shall have, declared Lord Beric, because they're getting closer to getting the fight going. But your innocence must be your armor. Clegane's mouth twitched. My innocence against your breastplate. Is that the way of it? Ned, help me remove my breastplate. Arya got goosebumps when Lord Beric said her father's name, but this Ned was only a boy. Fair-haired squire, no more than 10 or 12. He stepped up quickly to undo the clasps that fastened the battered steel around the marcher lord. The quilting beneath was rotten with age and sweat and fell away when the metal was pulled loose. Gendry sucked in his breath. Mother have mercy. Lord Beric's ribs were outlined starkly beneath his skin. A puckered crater scarred his breast just above his left nipple. Keep talking about him a little bit here. Ned fetched Lord Beric his sword belt and a long bag black surcoat. It was meant to be worn over armor, so it draped his body loosely. So I just want to talk a little about this Ned character.
You mean Edric Dayne?
Yeah.
Ned. You mean a Dayne guy from Starfall?
Ned Dayne, huh? Pretty interesting. My.
This is where we should start piecing things together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, the other kind of interesting thing about this is this is one of those characters that we know actually George really felt like he may have messed up with not having the 5-year time jump.
Yeah, it seems like Darkstar is who Ned was to become in the story. And now we have this Edric Dayne, who's been a character that a lot of people have theorized about. Obviously, was fairly important, especially with a name like Ned at this point in the story. Now people are wondering, well, what happens with Ned, a.k.a. Edric Dayne? What happens with him? And now if Darkstar is filling his role, could there be an extra thing for, Edric Dayne? Who knows? Personally, I think that Edric Dayne might end up getting some like nice little subplot. And I think Darkstar will fulfill the role that Edric Dayne was actually supposed to fill. At least that's my opinion. There's also just something really compelling about the idea that like there was a Ned in this show or this book and the series that was so noble and so correct and so right and just. And then Dark Star being what seems to be just such a complete dastardly bastard. If that would have been another Ned, right? Like the opposite Ned, not honorable, not just, not loving, right? Dark Star is the opposite. So it would have been cool to see little Ned Dane or Edric Dane grow up and become Dark Star and kind of go opposite of Ned Stark. But I don't think that's going to happen now. But this is where we should be questioning the fact that after Arthur Dane was killed, Ned took off his things. He went back to Starfall. Ashar Dane kills herself, supposedly, that we never find the body. And then they name a kid after the man that killed Arthur.
And that's the most interesting thing. Why would you name somebody after the guy who supposedly kills Arthur Dane and then perhaps causes Ashar Dane to commit suicide? Like, that's the most interesting thing. And so he's also supposedly born to some Dane. We have no idea who it is. I think his mother is just some rando person that's just part of that family. Obviously, some people believe, well, maybe he is, I don't know, you know, maybe he's actually Ned Nashara's kid, right?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, his father, whose name is
unknown, age doesn't line up, though, is kind of the problem.
The timeline does not work out well for it. It says his father, whose name is unknown, was the elder brother of Arthur, Lady Ashara, and Lady Illyria Dane. Edric serves as a squire for Beric Dondarrion. I mean, there's another thing about this kid that is kind of troubling, is the fact that he has pale blonde white hair and deep blue eyes that almost seem purple. Well, Matt, who would that remind us of?
Well, that sounds a little bit maybe like a Targaryen.
Like a Targaryen, huh? Mm-hmm. Is this a red herring for George, and then he introduces Fagon later, or is this another Targaryen child running around? Is this who Ned took back to Starfall? I don't think the timing works out for it.
I mean, unless he's lying about his age, because he says to Arya. I think it's in the next Arya chapter. So yeah, we get much more about him in the next Arya chapter, but that'll be a while before we get there. But yeah, I mean, he says, you know, I'm only 12. So that's where the timeline doesn't make up. So obviously if he is 12, he's born after the fact and somehow the family decides we want to honor Ned Stark. Maybe. I mean, maybe they just like the name.
Yeah, they're like, you know, it's a shame he killed our family member, but right, man, but it's too good.
Ned's just too good of a name, right? I mean, it's like you don't see Jamie Stark, or, you know, I mean, Aerys Stark, you know. I don't think they'd be naming their kids after the Mad King.
It is a there are so many theories that have been spawned from this, by the way. You know, one of them that I heard, this is a really old one. Are you ready for this one? Mm-hmm. This one's not popular anymore, I don't think. That Septa Lemoore is not Ashara Dane, but Septa Lemoore is Lyanna Stark. And that she stayed in Starfall for a time and gave birth to another Targaryen boy, and that was Edric Dane.
Okay.
And they hid her out, and then that's they end up naming it Ned.
So after his uncle. So she had twins at Starfall, or
no, just had one. Just had a. It's not my theory.
Right. I guess I'm just like, well, hold on. If he's like 4 years younger than John, so
it doesn't make a lot of sense. But this is a very old theory. I'm talking like probably 13, 14 years ago. This was a theory that people threw around a lot, but the timeline stuff really just kind of kicks it in the butt, right? But if you take away the timeline stuff, it does kind of sound interesting, doesn't it? Like naming the kid Ned, though, if you want to
hide. He also is the current Lord of Starfall.
He is the Lord of Starfall. One cool thing that I think that George could do is that now that, and this would be very meta because like we're not really supposed to know in the story that Ned was supposed to become Darkstar. But having Ned rise up and kill Darkstar would be like this Edric Dane moment of him killing who he almost became, you know, like in a really meta way. It'd be like Edric killing the worst part of him that would have been him if George wrote the 5-year gap. So there's kind of like a weird like meta theme to it that's interesting.
Yeah, and so, and again, this a lot of this stuff will be in the next Arya chapter, because that's where we hear all this stuff. But he does go on to say in that chapter, right, the big deal is he says that Ned states that Arya's half brother Jon Snow and our milk brothers, that their wet nurse Wyla, who has been a servant of House Dane for many years, is Jon's mother, and swears that it is true on the honor of his house, right? And so that's like the big deal, because Wyla is supposedly the random, you know, lady that Ned hooked up with and had Jon Snow.
Yeah.
So he at least believes it to be true, but then still, why would you name some random kid after your wet nurses, some servants, you know? And that's where things get really weird. I mean, again, we'll talk about a lot about that in the next chapter, but.
And the fact that Edric Dane has Targaryen traits is just so weird. Like, why did you do that to us, George? Probably to do exactly what me and you are doing right now. He might be
the character that George is like, dude, man, God, I don't know what to do.
Maybe he's the prince who was promised.
Could be.
I don't know how or why.
Good. I mean, who knows, man?
Dude, this is why the books are so much more fun, because like this guy does not exist really in the show, right? Like this is something that we would like Darkstar, all this stuff, like not really going to be seen at any point or have any consequence, where the books, something's going to happen with this character in Darkstar and all that craziness. Sort of the more, I mean, there's so much to it. So very exciting. Very, very exciting.
All right, let's move over to the fight. And there are some cool lines in here, but I mean, really, a lot of it is just a fight, really. There are some cool things I'll try to pull out of here. But I think, again, if you want to just watch the fight, you can find the clip on YouTube, or, you know, go to Max and pull it back up.
And so you can tell me this real quick. The best line of dialogue in this book right here. You ready?
Go ahead.
For the night is dark, and the others chanted Harwin and Engai.
I always mess his name up.
Loud as the rest and full of terrors. This is it. This cave is dark too, said the Hound, but I'm the terror here. I hope your god's a sweet one, Dondarrion. You're going to meet him shortly. Dude, that is a dope line. That I goes love hard. That. Yeah, it goes real hard. Does he say it in the show?
No.
Boo. Dan and Dave were messed up in season 2 and 3.
I mean, I don't know. I rewatched it. Maybe he does, because maybe they don't show it right in that little clip I watched. But in the clip I watched, I didn't see it. So dude,
that's a slammer of a line.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's huge.
This cave is dark and I'm the terror. Like, okay, let's go.
Dude. Okay, bro, here we go. So burn in 7 hells, the Hound curse. Yeah, as he lights his sword, he threw a glance at the Red Priest. Every word you say proclaims your guilt, dog. Now, this is something that the show got better than the book right here, just because they didn't, because it's, I mean, Arya is the one seeing it. As soon as the sword gets lit in the show, the Hound actually like takes a step back. Like he's kind of like, uh-oh. Like you can see the fear hit his face, because he is afraid of fire. So there's some cool lines here. Every move Beric made fanned them and made them burn brighter until it seemed as that the Lightning Lord stood within a cage of fire. Is it wildfire? Arya asked Gendry. No, this is different. This is magic, she finishes. The Hound edged back. Now they're talking about, you know, the shield, the fighting. Clegane caught one blow high in his shield, and a painted dog lost its head. And so they do have a little bit going on with the shield here as it's going, and eventually it ends with Arya saw it in the same stance. The flames had spread across the chipped yellow paint, and the three black dogs were engulfed. So is that how the Hound and the Mountain in the show, Clegane Bowl, I think Clegane Bowl is going to be very different in the books, but in the show, Clegane Bowl does happen and they both fall into fire.
Could be. That could definitely be their end. I mean, there would definitely be something about that with Sandor killing his brother with fire. There would be some nice thematic ties to that. It'd be good.
Yeah. I mean, they could both die with fire. That could definitely be a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think it's going to be, and I think it's going to happen before Dream of Spring. I think it'll be, I actually think the Game Bowl will happen in Wind's Winter.
Interesting. Okay.
Because I just think they're setting it up to be, I think because he's like the gravedigger and he's like working with the faith, like they kind of, they did that a little bit in the show, but they didn't go full into it. I think it's likely that Cersei's trial will actually be very, I don't know that she's going to blow the Sept of Baelor up. To be, that might not even happen.
That was not one of the moments George gave them.
We don't know that that's going to happen in the books, which is crazy, because if that doesn't happen, then that's totally different things, because that was such an amazing moment in the show. But it literally might not happen. I think it's possible that they're gearing it, that George was, maybe, you know, things have changed over the year, but where we leave A Dance with Dragons, to me it seems likely that it's going to be a trial by combat. It's going to be the Faith versus Cersei, with her champion being Robert Strong, who is, you know, the mountain that is his name in the books, you know, the zombie mountain. And I think the Faith is going to get to choose their champion, who I believe will be the Hound, the Gravedigger.
Right.
Who's working at this like small little church.
Right. And also George really likes these little cheeky things, but it's going to be a Gravedigger versus a zombie.
Right.
Right. And both brothers have cheated death at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's, yeah. Now, the only thing is that I feel like there would be a pretty solidified ending to this one way or the other. I don't think he would do the double death again. Like, you can't do the double death again.
Or they kill each other.
Yeah. No, yeah. Because you did that with the Viper and the mountain was essentially that, right?
Like in the books, it kind of is.
Yeah. It's essentially that. So I don't think that you can go to the well again for that. But I'm not completely convinced. I mean, especially, and also you could think about this, you could still do tribal combat.
Well, the Hound might have a lot more role to play in the books.
Sure.
because the Hound seems like he's gonna have to run into Arya again. And yeah, he seems like he's gonna have to run into Sansa again. So if the Hound does, and you know, a lot of it's actually here because of like this fight too, right? I mean, as he's fighting, Arya saying, you know, guilty, kill him. You know, she's yelling, kill him. And when Lord Beric is the one who, with the Hound, I mean, the Hound cuts through a flaming sword.
It's so sick.
It's so sick in the show, too. He cuts through a flaming sword right down his shoulder, right through his shoulder. And Arya screams no here, but the burning sword snapped in two, and the Hound's cold steel plowed into Lord Beric's flesh, where the shoulder joint, his neck, and clove had cleaned down to the breastbone. The blood came rushing out in a hot black gush. So that's kind of interesting too, because here it is, you have cold steel being defeated by fire. And actually it's kind of the other way around, where they're the champions of R'hllor and they are defeated
by the cold.
By the cold.
Yeah. And you know, the big thing is at the end of this fight, Beric comes back, right?
Right.
And I want to be very clear. I see some people be like, oh, everything can be explained rationally in A Song of Ice and Fire, so there's no real magic. I disagree. I think this is clear magic. He should be dead, and he has died many times before, and this is where we see Lady Stoneheart. And also, it's just amazing that all of this stuff is happening in a weirwood. Just saying, when weirwoods are around, weird things happen, and we should take note of it. And there's no doubt in my mind that the magic in this world is all somewhat connected. So, who knows? Maybe the weirwoods had more to do with it than R'hllor.
Yeah.
I don't know. And
you want to know what else is interesting is that, connecting the chapters, last week's chapter was about Craster taking the babies. It's Craster's Keep and the babies. And we know ultimately that they take the babies and they do that. And the White Walkers can resurrect people via like ice zombies, you know, or just sort of zombie skeleton things, and that R'hllor can also do it. And that's one of the things we've talked about, which is like blood, like how a lot of religions share similar aspects of power, even though they do things kind of their own way.
Yeah. It's a different space for the same type of power.
Yeah. So it's just very like both of those have resurrection. Now the faith, what am I thinking of? The water gods. What do they call them? The
drowned god?
The drowned god. Yes. That I think we see more as like, it's just like CPR. It's like,
they kind of figured out
CPR, and that's really what it is.
Which is cool. You know, there are things that you can explain away, and that's what makes this series fun, because you're kind of guessing and wondering. Mm-hmm. But also, let's not forget the way that Beric sets his sword on fire here in the books is that he cuts his palm open and uses blood magic. He literally slices his palm and lights a sword on fire with it. To me, that's obviously magic. Like that, yeah, to sure. me, that's
well, him getting resurrected is definitely mattered.
Yeah, and it all seems like it's blood magic at the end of the day. Like blood has a significance. And by the way, Beric's blood's not King's blood.
Mm-hmm.
So I think any blood
could be. It could be one of those things where King's. It's not necessarily that it's King's blood. It's just that they think it's more powerful.
They think it's King's blood.
Right, or they think it's more powerful because it's King's blood when it's.
Well, it's also not. The system in which they live in, right? Like, of course, sure. The king is better than me. Of course, absolutely. The king has better blood. Yeah,
yeah. So okay, so there. I'll read it just a few more lines here because there's a couple cool things. There was a strap of pink where the leather strap had clung, but above and below the flesh was cracked and red and bleeding from elbow to wrist. When his eyes met hers, his mouth twitched. "You want me dead that bad? Then do it, wolf girl. Shove it in. It's cleaner than fire." Clegane tried to stand, but moved a piece of burned flesh right off his arm, and his knees went out from under him. Tom caught him by his good arm and held him up. Arya thought, and his face. But he was the hound. He deserved to burn in a fiery hell.
Maybe a slight moment of empathy here and Sandor.
Also, kind of well, also just thinking about his arm and his face.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, taking off his face.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And real, just a little thing here, too. Next week is Catelyn. So we're talking about resurrection, all these things. And the opening line to that chapter is, "Let the kings of winter have their cold crypt under the earth." Catelyn thought the Tullys drew their strength from the river, and it was the river they returned when their lives had run their course.
Which is exactly where her life ends up. Wow. Yeah. Wow. George. He's cooking.
Goat. Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Maybe we should be looking at these opening lines a little bit more for characters that we don't know where they're going, because George might be telling us in this first sentence or two.
Yeah, that'd be something. That'd be an interesting project to do.
The first sentence from every POV.
First and last sentence from every POV and in the order in which they're written.
That could be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, hey, for those of you guys listening, Jimmy and I did do also a little Patreon episode as well, talking about George's blog post where he goes off about Warner Brothers and HBO a little bit again in George Code. So you can go check that out. We have another one coming soon. We're going to get to it, and we will get to our season 3 and 4 predictions outline. Now that we have some new information of House of the Dragon. So with that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 35, Catelyn 4.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, or leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.